From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of May, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. A bit later in the program, we'll hear from the folks at K-State University. Dan O'Brien will be here to take up the agricultural energy markets. Along the way, we'll get an update of crop progress from the statisticians in Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Nebraska, and Minnesota. And we'll hear all about the agricultural weather forecast as we close out our program. Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming will be here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Tuesday afternoon, futures in Chicago finished mostly lower. Nearby July contract and the soft red winter wheat today at $7.79¾, 23¼ lower for the afternoon. September at $8.28½, down 22, and next year's July of 2012 at $9.25½ a bushel, down 8¼. The hard red in Kansas City finished the nearby July contract at $9.88¾, down 12¼, and the soft red, the spring wheat, in Minneapolis at the Grain Exchange finished at 9.12. That was down 19 cents. Actually, those are backwards. Hard red at 9.12, down 19, and the spring at 9.88¾, down 12¼. July corn futures back in Chicago, 7.33¼, down 20¾ today. September at 7.05, 14¾ lower. December down 8 at 6.62½. And the March corn, 6.72¾, down 10¼. May futures, 6.79¾, down 10½ cents. July corn of next year, 10½ lower as well, at $6.85½. July soybeans at $13.72¼, down a penny and a half. The August at $13.68, up 0.75 cents. September at $13.60½, up 2¼. November beans at $13.54¼, up 3½ cents. The Mercantile Exchange settled the August live cattle at $103.90. Down 20. August feeder cattle at 122.77½, 2½ cents higher, and the July lean hogs at $86.92½, finished $2.40 lower on this Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana. Here's how the outside markets finished up for the day. July crude oil, $99.54 a barrel, up $1.84. Ethanol at $2.61¼, 3¼ cents lower. Natural gas at $4.33½, a penny and a tenth lower. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.90¼ a gallon, up 6½ cents. Gold futures at $1,523.20 an ounce, up $7.90. The Dow Jones now 330 higher. That's 3.3 higher at 12,384. And the U.S. dollar at 75.88 is down 0.21. The CRB index at 339.27, 2.3 higher on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. They say this afternoon should show us a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly sunny skies, the high near 81 degrees, southeast winds at around 6 miles an hour. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms too, mainly after 1 a.m. though. Mostly cloudy, a low 62, southeast winds around 9. Chance of precip in the area, 60%. Wednesday, showers and thunderstorms again, cloudy, a high of 81. Chance of precip at 70%. Wednesday night, showers and thunderstorms, precip chance at 80%. And Thursday, again, the showers and thunderstorms likely, cloudy, a high near 70 degrees, 70% of the area covered by thunderstorms. Thursday night, chance of showers and thunderstorms continues, but the precip chance is just at 30%. By the time we get to Friday, it'll be mostly cloudy with a high of 68 degrees. Saturday, sunny, a high of 78. Saturday night, partly cloudy, a low of 60. Sunday, sunny and 84 degrees. Sunday night, mostly clear, a low of 66. And on Memorial Day, sunny with a high near 86 degrees. On the phone line now to take a look at the agricultural futures markets with us is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me about this marketplace at this point.
Well, you know, it's a lot different than what it looked like early this morning. We opened up the grains and shot higher out of the box this morning, and by the time the day was over, the corn and the wheat didn't feel very peppy today, Todd, but it seems like there was a lot of commercial activity of put buying in the September contracts in both the corn and the wheat. Eventually, we're seeing a lot of 690, 880 put spreads being put on, buying the 690 put and selling the 880 calls, and buying the $7 put and selling the $8 calls, done by two of the big commercial houses, not knowing whether it was their customers or the commercial business. But that caused, along with the spreading of buying the beans and selling that they've been long corn and short beans and long wheat and short beans, a lot of that being reversed today, that caused this market to sort of weaken in a very light trade in the afternoon time period.
That strategy does what for them in their position?
Well, along that, it puts a bottom under the market, or we've talked a lot about the commercials wanting to acquire some cash corn to get through their summer needs, whether they're ethanol plants, whether they're corn syrup plants or whatever, or just for feed users. It lets them aggressively buy cash corn here, and then instead of just selling the board to be equally offset or hedged, why they have that 690 put, which is just not that much below the market, that does protect them if this market does seem to fall apart. They're just short a dollar or $1.80 higher from where we are here now by being short the call, which would in effect also hedge them or turn them off on the other side of the position. So it's a way of protecting accumulation of cash corn or cash wheat.
Anything that a producer should be considering as they look at what's been happening in the commercial side of the marketplace? Or?
Well, I think that along there, if they're doing what we believe they're doing, which is actually, semi-hedging or putting a bottom under this market but leaving the top open, they might want to put a bottom under the market by a purchase of puts or something that way. But we do think that the weather, it did turn drier the second week of the forecast, which is after June 1st, we've still got another 1 to 2 inches of rain to get through this week, some locally or heavier showers before that, and it has to dry off before we get that 13 million acres that isn't planted to corn yet in the ground.
Now, tell me about that 13 million acres. We'll hear more from the statisticians, but you've got a good idea where it's placed?
Oh, I think it's really easy to say. A lot of it's in Ohio, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, the Dakotas. A lot of the areas are pretty good. Pennsylvania's way behind also in some of the areas that way. But unfortunately, the wet areas seem to be the areas that are drawing the attention of the weatherman. And those little watch boxes were all over the screen last night and probably will be again over the next couple nights.
Yeah, it's probably important to note, of course, that Illinois is the number two corn-producing state in the nation. Although maybe our governor would like to turn that around at some point.
There you go.
And then Indiana is number five. Ohio is number six. So it's not as exactly as if those areas are small areas. And when you put 13 million acres together, it can amount to quite a little bit of corn.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure that, there's been some progress made today in the areas that didn't get quite as much. And, the planters are rolling this afternoon over in our area because we only got 2/10 yesterday afternoon through that shower. But unfortunately, some of the wet areas that we know exist over here down southeast of Indianapolis, in that area and towards Ohio, they got a lot more than that, Todd. So unfortunately, the wet seemed to be getting wetter or staying wetter. And where we have been able to get some things done is where it's the light rain's been lighter. But, we know there's a lot of areas that need to get some in the ground. We know that there's some areas that probably plant a little more corn than what they were anticipating on when they went to the field that it went well, and probably through the central, west central, and east central in Illinois, I think probably put a few extra field or two in the ground.
There's been much made about the dollar and its value and crude oil and where it's headed. What do you think of those two things as outside influences at this point?
Well, they've been very very influential, and we've seemed to follow those on days we didn't have anything. You know, as we sit here up $1.95 in crude oil today and down 21 cents in the dollar, we have trouble looking and seeing down 20 cents in July corn and saying that they're being influential today. But they do have quite a bit to do with what's going on and what the world economy, what we're thinking about, and what's going on. You know, we do and have been thrown in here continually about Greece and their financial problems and whether, how the EU is going to handle them and what's going on. And that does hang over our heads as far as the outside ideas of the world's fiscal strength, and that, of course, was thrown out in the mix today again, too, is why we maybe shouldn't go higher in some of the commodities.
We will soon close out the end of the month. Has that had an impact anyplace?
Well, I think, you know, we've seen some of the fund money did not flow as expected this month. At the beginning of the month, it generally flows in a little bit. I think we did see a little fund money flow in this week, which is sort of unusual for the last week of the month. So the fund money has been erratic compared to how it has been, Todd.
And how about the Goldman Sachs roll?
Goldman Sachs roll, that probably has a lot to do with the July being off that way because we're pre-running that. And, of course, we are seeing that, you know, in the corn down 20 and three quarters in the settlement today, and on the Dece that they're probably rolling to only down 8. So that's very influential.
That's where I was trying to get to because I didn't know for sure whether those would be the 2 months, but you do have that July down 20 and three quarters and December not posting near the losses, the other contracts just down 8 cents. Will that happen for more than one day?
Oh, yeah, that'll probably be a 4-day roll, Todd. So that's going to continue to put some pressure on the nearby in comparison to the deferred.
And should it give producers a bit of peace of mind about what's going on?
It's something to consider. I think that we've got very tightness of the old crop corn. You know, no old crop corn is moving any volume anywhere at this point in time. The question we all have to ask ourselves is the farmer really short of corn, or is he just awfully busy in the field and not moving corn?
How about the soybeans for the day?
Soybeans, you know, we saw a little bit of pump up there, partially because of the spreading and partially because of some of the processors upping their bids a little bit here. And also the idea that there's a lot of acres in the Mid-South that would have been beans and should have been planted 2-3 weeks ago. A lot of people in Arkansas don't have any beans planted because of the water problems, Todd. So we are seeing a little production problems at this point. We're not too late to plant beans, but we are seeing some big firms put out the idea that there will be a reduction in bean acres also. We think that some of these corn acres will switch over, but there's some saying preventive plant's going to win out in the corn, and they just won't switch to beans. But we just don't see farmers in general not wanting to plant a crop if they can.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. Yesterday, USDA NASS released the weekly crop progress report. As of the 22nd day of May, 79% of the corn crop around the nation has been planted. That compares to 87% on the rolling 5-year average. Ohio is the big laggard, just 11% of the crop in the ground there compared to 80% on its rolling 5-year average and 87% last year for corn planted in Ohio. Ohio farmers, by the way, are reporting now that they have 4% of their soybean crop in the ground. That compares to 3% last week, 48% last year, and 54% on the rolling 5-year average. Around the nation, 41% of the soybean crop has been sown, compares to 51% on the rolling 5-year average and 51% last year.
This is Greg Tayson, director of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending May 22, 2011. In spite of parts of the state having less than 3 days suitable for field work, corn and soybean planting progress managed to meet or surpass the quick pace of 2010. Farmers would appreciate some dry, warm weather to help speed emergence, although good stands are reported where crops have emerged. Most of the week's rain was not heavy. However, areas in central, east central, and southwest Iowa reported receiving hail during the week, and tornadoes were reported in six Iowa counties on Sunday. Temperatures in Iowa for the week as a whole averaged 1.2 degrees below normal, and the statewide average precipitation was 1.16 inches, or just slightly above the weekly normal of 0.97 inches. 98% of Iowa's corn acreage has been planted, equal to last year, but ahead of the five-year average of 94%, and soybean planting is 78% complete, ahead of last year's 72% and the normal pace of 68%. Farmers made good progress during the week, although planting has advanced slower in the South Central District than in other parts of the state, with this being the only area where more than 5% of the corn and over 50% of the soybeans are left to be planted. Corn and soybean emergence at 74 and 21% respectively both lagged slightly behind last year, but are progressing ahead of the normal pace. This is Greg Tayson reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Illinois Field Office. Cool temperatures averaging 4.5 degrees below normal, accompanied with below normal rainfall, was a story for the seven-day period ending May 22nd. The lack of moisture throughout most of the state was a welcome sight as corn and soybean planting made excellent progress during the 5 days reported suitable for field work. And while the two southern crop reporting districts are still being reported the wettest areas in the state, they did dry down somewhat from the week before. Corn planting made excellent progress last week, advancing by 21 percentage points to 90% complete. This compares to 97% planted last year and 85% for the five-year average. 56% of the crop was reported emerged, compared to 86% last year and 66% for the five-year average. Soybean planting made good progress at 47% complete, compared to 46% planted on this date last year and 43% for the five-year average. 12% of the crop was reported emerged, compared to 25% 1 year ago and 17% for the five-year average. The soft red winter wheat crop was reported at 78% headed, the same as 1 year ago, with 79% being the five-year average. Overall, the wheat crop was rated in fair to mostly good condition. This has been Brad Schwab with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Significant rainfall and below-average temperatures were again recorded across the state. Dry conditions during the first half of the week allowed corn planting to advance to 94% complete, near 95 average, while soybean planting at 68% is ahead of average. Corn emerged was 55% and soybeans emerged were 20%. Wheat jointed was at 78% with wheat headed at 8%. Wheat conditions rated 55% good to excellent, which is below last year's 75%. This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Several consecutive days of warm, dry conditions this past week allowed producers to make significant progress planting. As of May 22nd, producers rated 4.7 days suitable for field work, the highest number so far this year. Spring wheat planting advanced 41 percentage points from the previous week to 80% complete. Corn advanced 34 points to 81% planted. Other crops that advanced at least 49 percentage points from the previous week include barley at 76, sugar beets at 80, and canola at 70% planted. Soybeans were 38% planted, compared to 76% last year and 68% for the five-year average. That's the weekly crop weather report for the week ending May 22nd, 2011. I'm Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS, Minnesota Field Office.
Hello, this is Greg Croson, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the crop weather report for the week ending May 22nd. Planting of both corn and soybeans progressed rapidly in between scattered showers. The continued wet weather caused flooding of low spots and river bottoms, which limited progress for the week. Corn planting is about 28 days behind last year's record pace and 14 days behind the five-year average. Planting of soybeans is running about 23 days behind last year and 14 days behind the average. Some hay farmers have cut hay, but baling it has been a challenge with the persistent rainfall. Precipitation range from 0.07 to 0.79 inches. Temperatures average from a high of 83 to a low of 35 degrees. For the week, 3 days were rated as suitable for field work. 49% of the intended corn acreage has been planted, behind last year's 88% and 76% for the five-year average. By area of the state, 57% of the corn has been planted in the north, 48% in the central region, and 35% in southern Indiana. 20% of the planted corn acreage has emerged, well behind the 78% recorded for last year and the 54% for the five-year average. 17% of the intended soybean acreage has been planted, compared with 49% for last year and 43% for the five-year average. 3% of the planted soybean acreage has emerged, behind the 32% recorded for last year and the 18% for the five-year average. 96% of winter wheat acreage is jointed, compared with 99% for last year and 99% for the five-year average. Winter wheat condition is rated at 59% good to excellent, compared with 70% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Coming up next, foliar fungicides are being pushed for the health of the corn plant. But what does that really mean in terms of disease control? We'll have some insight from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
University of Illinois Extension plant pathologist Carl Bradley has been running experiments on fungicides in corn. He wanted to know when it paid to apply them and when it did not. His data from 2008 to 2010 says about half the time applying a fungicide to a corn crop will result in an 8-bushel yield increase. It's probably not enough.
When I pull all of that together, the overall yield average is about 8 bushels an acre, which is not bad. But one thing you have to consider is that an average is just an average. That doesn't mean you're going to get that every time. Sometimes you might be above that. Sometimes you might be below that. So how do you get consistent yield response? And that's really when we're looking at disease control. So I had summarized our data by the level of disease that was present. And when we're getting to virtually no disease or very low disease pressure, we would have profitable applications of only maybe 6%, 7, 8%, something like that.
Higher disease levels in the corn result in a much better return on the fungicide investment. For instance, when disease on the ear leaf covered at least 15% of the area, then 75% of the time the fungicide application resulted in at least a 10-bushel yield increase per acre.
Scouting, we recommend to go out prior to tassel and take a look at the third leaf below the ear or higher, but really focus right in that level. And if you're finding disease present on at least half the plants that you're looking at, also consider a little bit about how susceptible they are to some of the diseases, then that might be a good trigger when it's present on the third leaf below the ear prior to tasseling on 50% of the plants.
As far as timing of the fungicide application, it should be done about the time of silking or just at tassel emergence. An earlier application is not recommended. This is because disease pressure that dramatically affects yield doesn't come until later in the life cycle of the corn plant.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
It's National Escargot Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1686, Daniel Gabriel Fahrenheit was born. He developed the Fahrenheit temperature scale and invented the mercury thermometer. Fahrenheit discovered, among other things, that water can remain liquid below its freezing point, and that the boiling point of liquids varies with atmospheric pressure. In 1844, Samuel Morse transmitted the message, "What hath God wrought?" from the U.S. Supreme Court to the Montclair station of the B&O Railway Company, the first American telegraph line. By the way, the biblical text from Numbers was selected by Annie Ellsworth teenage daughter of the Commissioner of U.S. Patents. In 1883, the Brooklyn Bridge opened. It took 14 years to build at a cost of $18 million and was the longest suspension bridge in the world at the time. In 1945, the first Food-O-Met was installed in a Grand Union Company store in New Jersey. And in 1964, Alan Hazelton died, an American electrical engineer. He invented the first circuit, which made commercial radio possible. By 1927, some 10 million receivers with his circuit were being used by listeners in the United States. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming is here to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Don. Start in the eastern Corn Belt and work your way to the west. Tell me what the weather will be like for planting.
Well, we're still going to be fighting Mother Nature with high chances of shower and thunderstorm activity and unsettled wet conditions. The eastern Corn Belt, especially as we get into Wednesday night and Thursday, we'll see some showers and thunderstorms. This will cover the whole Corn Belt area. Now, it's a fairly quick-moving system, but there will be some rainfall amounts that go better than an inch and a half or so. That's followed by another system over the holiday weekend that will spread showers and thunderstorms west to east over all of the Corn Belt. So we're going to be fighting more precipitation chances, and we'll have to get as much work done as we can in between them. Now, as we get into the early to mid portions of next week, once we get through Memorial Day and beyond, it looks like high pressure will start to try to establish itself a little bit more. This may not necessarily make it completely dry, but it will make it warmer, and it may get us into at least a thunderstorm and a shower pattern that will be less frequent. But for the next 5 or 7 days, we're still going to be wet. After that, there's some hope for warmer, drier weather.
Is there a disparity between the east and west in how much rainfall producers can expect to see on their acres?
Well, probably not. These systems, due to the fact that these systems look to be almost making a beeline west to east along I-80 and Interstate 70 across the nation, I think we're going to see the rainfall patterns fairly consistent across all of the Corn Belt. It looks like, from what we're seeing, that the rainfall is going to be across the eastern Corn Belt of Ohio into Indiana. And then as you go west into Illinois and Iowa, northern Missouri, well, those areas, it's going to be between 1 to 3 inches of rainfall. And the only area that we see that might have a little bit more than that is going to be the Ohio Valley.
Have you been keeping tabs on other growing regions around the globe for wheat and corn? And if so, where are the hot spots?
Well, over in Europe, they had some very dry conditions early in the spring. Then they had some precipitation, and now, while it's not going to be completely dry, it is looking a little bit on the dry side over the Ukraine, some portions of Eastern Europe and Russia. Nothing excessively, but certainly the trend there is a little bit drier, while Northern and Western Europe, Southern Europe is going to be having the better chances of moisture. In China, a little bit drier there, not completely dry, but some of the central, southern, and eastern areas are going to dry out a bit and warm up as well.
Thank you so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joined us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Be safe, get in the field when you can, and have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.